Bonding by Marielle Franklin. Read by Ellie Kendrick. Part 1. Market Research. The activity of gathering information about consumers' needs and desires. There was something magical about an island. The mere word suggested fantasy. You lost touch with the world. An island was a world of its own. A world, perhaps, from which you might never return. Agatha Christie. And then there were none. Chapter 1. Ashley was drunk, unsteady on her feet, the smell of her makeup overlaid with booze. She grabbed my arm, lurching against me as I struggled to fit the key in the lock. It wasn't the first time I'd found her in the stairwell. It must have been midnight by the time I came across her. It was a Wednesday. "I'm locked out," she said, slurring. Ashley and I shared a flat together. I'd met her only a few months earlier after the previous tenant had left. She'd seemed fine at the time. Normal, solvent, decent company for a stranger. It was why I'd chosen her in the first place. She'd been the front runner in a long line of candidates. Eventually, the door gave way, and I steered her gently to her bedroom where I left her in a clumsy attempt at the recovery position. "Thanks," she mumbled under her breath. For a second, I thought she'd stopped breathing. Then she opened her eyes and blinked at me. "Are you going to be okay?" No answer, so I dragged her pillows out of the way and stacked them neatly on the floor beside her. It was cold in the flat. The bulb in the hallway needed replacing, and there was a stale smell as if the place hadn't been lived in for a while. This wasn't so far from the truth. Neither of us liked coming home, and we didn't really treat it as if it was one. In the fridge, there were two Jim Kitchen curries, both low-fat, one out of date, a half-empty bottle of Blossom Hill, some Coronas, and a tub of Glossier Mega Greens detoxifying mask. I picked up the technically expired meal, considered eating it, then threw it out. The other I put in the microwave while I ate a handful of spinach from the bag. In the time it took me to complete these tasks, my phone buzzed sporadically. A few texts from a group chat I barely followed, and one from a newcomer on the app. The app was always on. I wasn't having much success with it, but I found it hard to delete the thing, so I left it there on mute, lurking on it occasionally, skimming over the stream of highs, spam, and the occasional, badly focused dick pic. Matt, 36, distracted me while I sat on the windowsill and ate. Earlier that day, he'd sent me a video of a shredder slowly chewing up a piece of paper. This was how the two of us communicated. I sent him close-ups of myself, and he sent me pictures of the objects on his desk. A Rexel stapler, slightly damp with sweat. An empty pret-a-manger box. "What I'd like to do," he'd said between photos of a pad of yellow post-its, "is meet you in a public place for coffee, and then fuck you stupid, like a wolf." "You there?" he asked, while I opened the kitchen window, which took some effort as it was sealed with duct tape to stop the draft. Fresh air flew into the room, slightly alleviating the smell of damp. Outside, four stories below, a dull clanging sound rose from the courtyard. Most probably someone had broken in again and was going through the bins. In bed, I balanced my laptop on my knees. It took a while to click to Game of Thrones. I'd seen this one before. I'd seen them all. But it was comforting, watching these things over again. Most nights, the routine numbed me enough to sleep. I watched a pack of dogs as they chased a naked woman into a forest. I closed my eyes as she screamed into the darkness. When I opened them, Matt, 36, had sent me a photo of the charger for his phone. Bored at work the following afternoon, I sent Matt, 36, a close-up of my skirt. He fired back with a picture of his keyboard and, erotically, the corner of his hand. It was quiet in the office, quieter than usual. I heard Ed's footsteps as